dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcasts. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked out Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 12. I am Stank Dog with you once again. And I am joined this week by another special guest. Not actually all of our guests are special guests, but we have an extra special new guest today. The star... Can I call you the star of Hack TV? Is that okay?
That's fine with me.
The star of Hack TV, the producer of Hack TV, the editor of Hack TV. You know what? It's pretty much your job now. You are in charge of Hack TV. Everybody, this is Saito187 in the house.
What's up, guys?
So we have been working, well, kind of, sort of, trying to work on Hack TV for a long time now. And... we're getting there. We have the pilot out. Everybody saw, which was very, very good work, by the way. I have to give you credit for that. A little applause for that. Even though we had to work with a little bit of real media, we had to work with a little bit of Windows encoding, we had to work with a pretty desperate, a pretty good mix of different formats. So I know that was tough. So came out very good, I thought, and hilarious.
I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, so hopefully we will keep that going when we come out with the regular episodes of that. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit later. But first, I'm going to jump into our housekeeping section. I got quite a few pieces of email this week that I wanted to talk about. The first one, and actually this has been the past couple weeks, I got one from Extreme Audio, who says, or actually asks a very straightforward question, are there any stores that sell your magazine? And of course he's referring to Binary Revolution, the magazine. No, there are no stores carrying Binary Revolution magazine. We are completely, in all sense of the word, independent. It is very much a out-of-the-basement kind of deal. We actually had our a guest host, Logan Five, who he and I do most of the work in designing, laying out the magazine. He has, believe me, he does more of the work than I do. And we are doing this completely over the web, over the internet. Our goal, yes, is to eventually get to a publisher, get to a distributor who can carry this in stores, but we have not gotten there yet. So right now, you will come to binrev.com, you can go to straight to magazine.binrev.com and order online through PayPal. We also have options that you can order cash if you don't have or don't want a PayPal account, so that's cool. But eventually, yes, we would like to get them in stores, but we need your support to do so. We need people to show that there's an audience for a magazine like this and show a publisher, a distributor, that people are interested in buying this in store. So thank you for that email. That tells me that maybe there are people interested in buying this in the store. So that is our goal. We will move in that direction with your help. Now, another good email I got, and I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this or if there's any significance to this name, but it's Lab5AE. I don't know if I'm supposed to pronounce Lab5AE or something, but he says that he just started listening to BinRev a few weeks ago, BinRev Radio, of course. Excellent show. I've already burned the shows and gave them away to friends. Well, thank you very much for the support. I'm glad you like it. And that's a great, great idea. I love the idea, the fact that you're burning them and giving them out, spreading the word, getting more and more people interested, and hopefully they will like the show and come back and start downloading it. And, you know, that's the way we grow, that's the way we spread. I mean, we started doing this with just a few people and just for the fun of it. And, I mean, as many of you know, the show has just blown up phenomenally, very happy with it. The show hasn't changed. We're still doing it the same way we have for the most part, having fun. It's just our way of giving back to the community. So we're going to keep doing that, and no matter how many people listen, hopefully we'll keep going the same route we have been going. He also gave me some good advice or a good suggestion here. He says there's a site called SPCO-OP that prints small runs of zines. That's .com, of course. That prints small runs of zines. I know they do a lot of underground metal and punk zines. I just thought you might want to check it out. It beats the hell out of stapling. Well, yeah, trust me, anything beats the hell out of stapling. Getting poked in the eye with a sharp stick beats the hell out of stapling a bunch of freaking magazines. I folded, stapled, and tried to trim the whole first run of the magazine, and it was the most miserable time that I've ever had. It was horrible. So yeah, I've been looking for some places to have it printed, but frankly, we're still too small. We don't have large enough print run. Even this site, and I went to there and checked it out. It's an independent zine comic book publisher. They, like you said, it prints small zines. The biggest problem, A, is that it's black and white. They only print black and white. They don't do color, and we very much want and like having the color. And I think the people who've bought the magazine in the past very much like the color covers. So we're definitely keeping color at least for the cover. So it's not really a good option. Also, even though they're small print, small publishing company, they still, what I saw, said they had a 1,000 minimum units. So regardless of the color thing, they still wanted more units than we can really afford to do. They want 1,000 units per year, and we don't know how many we're going to need over the next year, how much we're going to grow, if we're going to grow. So, I don't know. That doesn't exactly define small publishing. 1,000? We must be, like, tiny, microscopic publishing compared to that, then. We have another email that actually, Saito and I were talking about this before we started recording. This was actually an email to Duel, which he forwarded to me, Duel over at Radio Freak America, from, and I hope I pronounced this name right, it's Boof, I guess is the name. He had quite a few things to say, but the part that I wanted to touch on is that basically he recommends an encoding like Vorbis, which is an OGG container. It's not patented, widely acceptable, which is absolutely true. Almost every player I've ever seen plays OGG. And he was recommending that in lieu of MP3, which is still has a copywritten compression algorithm. And actually, I very much agree with this. I absolutely 100% think this is a good idea. Truly, because of this email, I have made the decision that I'm going to start converting past episodes and all ongoing episodes. I'm going to start putting them up in OGG format. Now, I'm not going to only do OGG format before any of you out there get mad. I'm still going to put up the MP3 format as well. I'm going to offer it in both, kind of like our friends over at Game Radio, C4 over there, HWAQ.com. I'm going to put up both up versions because I don't want to alienate people. I don't want to alienate new users from listening to the show. And some of our users are not, you know, the most deep technical people, and they don't want to have to deal with the hassle of unusual formats and players and stuff like that. Yes, majority of players will play OGG fine, but just to play it safe, I'm going to put up both. I think that's a good short-term compromise, and if someday, by some weird whatever, MP3 goes away, we'll be moving on, we'll be into a new format, and we should be fine. But I don't see MP3 going anywhere anytime soon. Do you?
Well, personally, not here. But getting back to the Ogg Vorbis, I don't know if you noticed, but I think it was in Red Hat 8, could be 9 also, that most players like XMMS didn't support MP3 anymore because of some type of copyright. So a lot of users were kind of saying, you know, what was going on? They couldn't play their music anymore. They had to go out there and get either an Ogg Vorbis plugin, or I think they had some freeware MP3s, but I'm not sure where that's going right now, though.
Yeah, and that's exactly his motivation and exactly his point in saying that it's time to convert if this is what it's going to start coming to, and he's absolutely right.
It also has some cool features, which I saw the other day. A friend of mine, which is into anime also, he was playing when it had dual audio format, so on the fly he was able to switch between English and Japanese, which was kind of cool.
Interesting. So we can have somebody translate our show into Japanese and Spanish and any other language we want, all in the same container?
Yep, multilingual.
Ooh. We actually have, you'd be very surprised at how many different visits from different countries we get. We have a lot of people all over the world that listen to the show, so joking aside, that might actually be an option. I certainly can't speak, I can't even speak English properly. And Lord knows how butchered my Spanish is, so maybe in the future we'll have some volunteers to translate it over into other languages. That would actually be a really, really cool thing to do, but down the road sometime. I have one final email we're going to talk about this week, and this one is from G.I. Joe. Great name. Gotta love the old 80s throwbacks. He says he's currently listening to the MP3 of BenRev Radio 11 and are listening to us. We were joking about Pringles cans and stuff like that, and like they show it in the movies. I was definitely referring to he was questioning, was I talking about that movie Antitrust, which was the kind of Microsoft jab where the person playing Bill Gates was always eating Pringles. Yeah, I mean, that's what I had in my head when I made the joke, but not only that, but just generally, that people have this thing that hackers are sitting around drinking Jolt Cola all day, popping cans of Pringles, you know, in between skateboarding ventures. Nobody wants to see my fat ass on a skateboard, trust me. And I don't do the Jolt Cola thing. I might have the occasional Pringles, but no more than anybody else out there, so it's kind of just a jab at the general, you know, idea that people have of hackers that they get from the movies. Saito, do you go skateboard after work every day?
Personally, I don't. But speaking of the skateboarding thing, the first time I saw hackers, I was totally disgusted by the way that one guy was portrayed skateboarding. It just kind of, it was just bad taste.
You're talking about Mr. the Plague?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of funny, but
exactly. See, I took it as humor. I just kind of let it go as being funny. But yeah, they intended it to be kind of serious, I think.
Yeah, it's like I don't go rollerblading either, even though I own a pair of rollerblades. But
well, I own a pair. That doesn't mean I use them or I'm any good at them. Oh man. Yeah, there's just a lot of stereotypes out there that, you know, we work. We are professionals. We have full-time jobs, go to school. We live normal lives. You wouldn't be able to tell most of us from anybody else on the street. You know, I don't wear a bunch of leather and have all the stereotypical clothes and the style that you see in the movies. So, you know, that was really just kind of joking about how they portray hackers in the media, which, again, that's a horse we've beaten to death on the show many times. But yes, thank you for that email. That is exactly what I had in mind. So, yeah, you got that. And I think that's... I had quite a few emails. I'm going to go ahead and close up the mailbag this week, though. We'll touch on some more next week. Some of them were a little bit more... take a little bit more time to discuss. And I want to move on to some other topics this week. And, man, I don't know about you, but I had... Last week was just a phenomenal week. Even Monday of this week, I had so many things going on at one time that I just, you have to shift gears from one thing to the other so much that I just couldn't even keep my head straight. I was writing C code, Pro C, I was writing PLSQL, doing a little bit of shell scripting, which, as you know, is very limited for me. And you and I had worked on some PGP. Then I got to come home. I'm working on moving the sites over to a new host. Finally, a host that I will have some control over. I won't, if anything goes down or anything needs to be modified or changed, it'll be my control now. So I like having it back in my hands. So I had to come and do a lot of rewriting of my HTML, redoing a lot of my links. So I've just been coding like nonstop lately.
How many times was this so far, the moves?
This is my fourth or fifth. Fourth or fifth, I've kind of lost track, and that's like total amongst the two sites. And that's another thing, is I'm also trying to merge all of these sites under BenRev.com, keep that the central place, and kind of move the stank dog. I don't know, I've always from day one felt very, not, I guess paranoid's not the word, but self-glorifying or something, because it's very much, I don't know, feels like I'm tooting my horn to make stankdog.com the site that everybody goes to. I don't want that. I'm going to move that and just make that my own little personal storage, and, you know, I'll put my articles up and stuff like that, but I'm going to kind of put everything over to benrev.com. The binary revolution idea itself is more important to me in pushing that out, so I'm trying to move everything over there in addition to recoding and putting some new projects up there, the hacker gallery we talked about, and putting the forums over there. So there's going to be a lot of changes, so bear with us soon. Actually, as we speak, as this is streaming, I am probably coding and moving some of this stuff over. I'm joining all the sites under one registrar. They were scattered under a couple different registrars. Kind of putting my hand back in to get all these a little bit more organized and kept together. So all that, and I did somehow, I don't know how, but over the weekend I did find time to install Kazaa Lite on my system. I thought, you know, I want to try to get the show out there, get more people to be aware of it. So I installed Kazaa Lite and shared out all the episodes of RFA, Radio Freak America, as well as Binary Revolution Radio. So I put that out there and let people come and download it and see if they can check it out. I haven't actually seen or watched it to see if anybody's taking me up and actually downloading them, but it's there and minimized down there. So
you did sign up with the RIAA, you know, website.
Well, I of course wanted my amnesty.
Of course.
Oh, wait a minute. I own the copyrights to these shows. I have permission to air these shows. Not everything is about copyright, RIAA. Fucking assholes. See, damn you. Even when I have a new guest on here, you got me cussing, and we're not even, what, 15 minutes into the show?
I'm sorry.
I know. I try to control my... Everybody listens every week, and I try not... I'm trying my best to not use foul language, but every time... You know what? It's always the RIAA that brings it out of me. Those... bastards, I swear, suing a 12-year-old girl. All right, I digress. I'm going to, you know what, let's jump off of that. Let's jump back to Hack TV for a few minutes, because I know you and I have been putting a lot of time analyzing, discussing, thinking what's the best direction to go. I feel very good about the ideas that we've come up with. How about you?
We've definitely come up with some good stuff. Whether or not others will like it, it's up to, you know, we'll see.
Well, it's kind of like the show. It's like we're going to come on and we're going to have fun and put it out there, and I'm sure some people will like it and some won't. You know, you take the good with the bad, but I think most people will like it. It's going to be... It started off, I didn't think we were going to make it this... Well, I don't know exactly how to word it. It's going to be funnier than I was expecting, I think.
Yeah, if you like Office Space and you watch the old Batman stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's... Man. Especially if we go through with that skit we talked about yesterday, the Office Space will be very relevant reference.
Oh, yeah.
And really what we've been spending most of the time on in the beginning was encoding and formats and trying to decide on resolution, screen size, what's the best way to get this out and not completely rape our bandwidth. And that's what really most of your time has been spent on. Have we come up or decided on a couple... I think we decided we're going to make two versions of it available. Is that still the way you're thinking?
Possibly. I know, believe it or not, Windows Media actually comes out pretty good. The size goes extremely tiny, and the resolution is pretty good. So is the quality. Now, I know a lot of people don't have Windows machines. They run a few Linux machines, Zeus or whatever.
They don't want Windows machines. They hate Windows.
Right. So, I mean, there's a chance of going DivX also and possibly OGG, like we were talking about before.
Right.
And that way you can play it with MPlayer or whatever your favorite program is out there.
Yeah, now, and the other thing that I like about this is that the WMV is a much smaller file size because, believe it or not, I mean, well, there's no believe it or not, I think we all know that not everybody is broadband. Not everybody's going to be able to download. I mean, do you have an estimate of how long do you think this, how big do you think the AVI, the DivX AVI and high quality is going to be?
Right now, we plan maybe like a 512 by 384 resolution size, maybe 15 to 25 minutes.
We'll probably make it around 30 even, unless we go gung-ho and make a full hour, but I don't think we're going to do that right away.
Right now, that might actually come out to be maybe... 100, 150 megs, might be more depending on which codec is available at what time and all that stuff. I've seen different versions of DivX, you know, have a range of maybe 50 megs, you know, same size, same quality, everything.
Wow.
It's kind of pissing me off because DivX, they keep changing every week or every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know, that does get kind of annoying, and like, I've had cases where I downloaded it one day, and then 2 days later, I try to watch a video, and it's been changed again. And I have to go re-download the latest one. It's changed within the last couple days. That's That's really annoying. Plus, is it just me? Am I just getting bad versions, or am I going to the wrong place to download it? Because mine is loaded with spyware anymore. Well, I just want the damn decoder, and that's it. Don't give me the player. Don't give me the plugins and all the extra crap. Just give me the fucking DLL.
Well, DivX is starting to do that now. They've got a couple different versions. They've got the professional, which you have to pay for, and then you've got the regular decoder and player, but supposedly that has some form of adware built in, and they say it doesn't put any spyware in there, but that's yet to be determined.
Yeah, see, I'm pretty sure they do. Even that's why, you know, AdAware itself, I run that like weekly now, because...
Excellent program, by the way.
Excellent. It's like, it's just an absolute necessity anymore. I run it weekly because there's so much stuff out there that just flat out lies. You know, that's why I install Kazaa Lite, because Kazaa, as everybody knows, is loaded with spyware, and and if I every time I see Gator, I just want to spit on the screen. I hate that program so bad.
For those that might not know what AdAware is, you can go to www.lavasoftusa.com and get that. Totally removes all kind of spyware on your system.
Yeah, highly, highly recommended. And now, unfortunately, that's a Windows-only product, is it not?
That is correct, but you won't really have to worry about spyware if you've got some type of Unix variant.
Exactly. Oh, very good advice, very good advice. Well, let's move into some actual news topics this week, because I've had a very bad tendency lately of just ranting and going into stories and laughing. I want to actually cover some real topics this week. And the first one is something I actually mentioned on RFA last week, and that is that Microsoft's new OS Longhorn, codenamed Longhorn, Long Dong, whatever they're going to call it, has been delayed once again. Now, it reminds me of back in Windows 95. They pushed this back and pushed it back, and, you know, Windows 95 was originally supposed to be Windows Chicago in, like, 1993 or something. They kept bumping it back. They almost didn't even get it out in 1995. And that looks like the same thing's happening with Longhorn here. Are they going to call it Longhorn when it's actually released, or are they going to have another name change?
Probably going to have another name change.
Yeah, Longhorn doesn't exactly... there's too many Long Dong jokes just waiting to be... Long John Silver. There's too many jokes for that one.
Last I heard, it was coming out 2005, but now it looks like it's, what, 2006?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. And how convenient that that's happening. I mentioned this before, and I was going to go into more detail today. How convenient that the antitrust settlement with the Department of Justice expires 5 years. Well, guess what? 5 years, that would be 2001, 2003, 2006. How convenient is that? So the agreement, which said that they would not be bundling and taking advantage of their monopoly to force software onto people and to integrate things into their operating system, because, again, most of the listeners know this, so I'm not going to rehash the history of this whole deal, but the long and short of it is that when Microsoft released their operating systems, they were bundling MSN already on it and installed, and it was not fair to the other ISPs at the time, as well as Internet Explorer, which was, quote, integrated into the operating system. Yet, when you tried to put Netscape or any of these others on there, it was nothing but problems and headaches. Yes, you could install it, but Internet Explorer had a tendency of taking it back over. It had a tendency of causing errors in any other programs you put on there. So they were told that that was illegal. They were taking advantage of their monopoly to push their other products. Well, a lot of good it did, because Internet Explorer is the top browser. Netscape is just... Do they even put out new versions? I mean, all you have now is Mozilla, the Mozilla project, which is great, but, you know, Microsoft just pretty much, once again, killed off the competition with that.
I think Netscape is still putting stuff out, but not as often as they used to.
Yeah, see... They've turned into more like they remind me of IBM. They're going more into the service area, and they have really, like you said, they're not doing much with the browser anymore.
Well, they're going into service, because I know at one point AOL and Sun and Netscape had an alliance called iPlanet, and that just recently dissolved about a year ago. Everything kind of went back to Sun, so all the products that Netscape had, like mail and web service and all that stuff, are now belong to Sun.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So what is Netscape doing these days?
Beats me. I don't have Netscape installed, do you?
Well, no, and I have to say, unfortunately, it's terrible that they were put in this situation possibly, debatably, we won't go into a debate, because of the situation with Microsoft pushing them to aside. But frankly, their product was not, the later versions of it were so bloated, and just frankly, they weren't very good in my personal opinion, so I stopped using it because the functionality was not there, because it didn't do what I wanted to do as well and as quickly and efficiently as I wanted to do it. So that's the reason I stopped using it.
That's probably the reason a lot of people stopped using it.
Yeah.
Now, right now, I think I'm starting to use Mozilla Firebird, which is pretty nice. It's kind of clean, stripped down.
I have the same thing. I had that working on my laptop, and I was starting, you know, getting used to that and liking it. But the irony there is that is built off of the last code that Netscape released to the public, and people started running with that open source, and running with that source that was released to create it. So it's based on the same thing. How is theirs so much better than what Netscape was doing?
I guess it's just all the open source.
Yeah, I
go in there and just take out bloat.
Better, just better programmers, I guess, more efficient. Because that's what it is, it was bloat. And I mean, Microsoft is the king of bloatware, but anyway.
Right.
So anyway, that's they've bumped that back to 2006. It's yet to be determined if they're going to start integrating again, if they're going to start putting this stuff together. I know for a fact that they have purchased a couple different antivirus software companies. So, hey, they start integrating that, then, you know, Symantec and Norton and all these, what's the other one, McAfee, you know, they're going to be pissed if Microsoft is now going to integrate virus scanning into the operating system. You know, they're going to be out of luck. Who's going to pay for it when it's built into Windows, you know, operating system?
Right, and I didn't even hear about that one. That's new to me.
Yeah, they bought I think I talked about it on one of the first couple episodes of BinRev Radio. They bought a antivirus company, I think it's from Norway or somewhere in Europe, and bought their technology, and that's what the speculation was, that they were going to integrate that into the new OS. So, you know, same old Microsoft. And from one company I hate, well, actually, you know, I can't say that. I actually kind of like I like Microsoft products, I just think, well, some Microsoft products, let me clarify that. I don't like their business practices too much, but I actually think Microsoft makes some stuff that's really good. A little bloated, a lot bloated, but still. But one company I do hate from the ground up is Sony. And I know you probably disagree with me on this one, but I just cannot stand these hypocrites. So, today's anti-Sony is the How to Hack Your Dog section. Sony Aibo. Of course, you know the Aibo, right? The little robotic dog, cute as hell, blah, blah, blah. Well, the latest version of Sony's Aibo is going to be built with a wireless connection built into it. So, hackers of the world, time to hack the Aibo. Actually, hacking the Aibo is actually a little underground kind of thing that's been going on anyway. People love to reprogram their Aibo to do certain tricks and stuff like that. So, hacking the Aibo is not exactly new. But with this wireless connection, I'm trying to say, we're going to see, well, we could possibly see hijacking people's Aibos. I'm sure it's not going to be an easy thing. It probably will never happen, but it's a funny concept. Can you imagine these people walking down the street with their Aibos or even just around the house, and all of a sudden the Aibo gets dog-jacked and runs out the door down the stairs to somebody?
No, I've personally never seen one in person, have you?
I saw a demo of one, like, in a mall or in a, I don't remember, was it a Best Buy or somewhere? I saw a demo of one, and it was actually really cool.
They're sort of pricey, aren't they?
This one is, hold on, I have it right in front of me. This new model is $1,600.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. How many real dogs can you get for $1,600? Well, then again, you don't have to clean up after the Aibo. That's a bonus. That may be worth a couple hundred right there.
I don't know about 16.
Yeah, right. And with $1,600, people are going to be keeping a close eye on that dog. He's not going to get out the door and run out to somebody. There's not going to be any dog jackings going on, I don't think. There's going to be like this underground civilization. They're going to be like, instead of roosters and cockfighting, they're going to have these little Aibo fights going on with hacked versions. These new versions of the Aibo also have, I forgot their terminology, but basically a little brain, I think it's called Aibo Mind, where you can put in a memory stick and reprogram and teach the dog tricks by inserting a new memory stick. So I can just picture people teaching the dogs to fight to the death or fight. There's going to be little dog pits going on. Actually, here's the scene I picture. This would be the most hilarious thing for Hack TV. It would never happen, but I can just picture driving down the street, war driving, you got your laptop in the car, just cruising along, low riding, bouncing, and right behind you, you got an army of Ibos trailing along behind, like 20 to 30 Ibos just running along behind the car, chasing it, where you've just dog-jacked every Ibo in the city. That would be hilarious.
I'd pay to see that.
we can Photoshop. We can make fix that or something just to be funny. That would be hilarious. But no, that's going to be tough to do. We're just joking around. But it is, there is a wireless connection in there. I'm sure people are going to play and hack this Ibo just like they have all the others. So, another article I read, I don't know what to think about this one. I kind of got a little bit pissed off at this, but at the same time, I kind of agree with this. So, let me see what you think about this. And this is an article I read on vigilante justice on the internet, and that there are increasing numbers of acts of vigilante justice going on, mostly against spammers. There are even open source programs being written and developed to out-spam the spammers, to hack the spammers. Obviously, filtering spam is a great thing, but these are actually aggressive software that are supposed to turn the spam back at people. Now, I absolutely agree with this. I have to say it. I don't know if it's a bad thing for me to say that. It's kind of destructive. I don't really like putting the negative out there too much. But, this is one of those I feel like they deserve it kind of situations, Vigilante there's no laws. They will not pass laws against spamming, or not good ones anyway, that you can sink your teeth into. Our judicial system doesn't care. I mean, look how long it took us to get a no-call list, for God's sake.
Right, and that's only if you're a big-name company like Amazon or Yahoo or Microsoft, where you can actually do something about it, fighting spam. I think there was a few lawsuits that were settled a while back. I think it was Amazon got maybe $50,000 out of a company in California that was spamming under their name.
Yeah, and I wonder how much they had to pay their lawyers and everything fees just to get that $50,000. It probably ended up in the hole after the whole thing was said and done.
Right. I personally agree with you. I hate spam. I get tons of it.
I told the listeners a couple episodes ago about CloudMark SpamNet. I don't know if you use that, a plug-in for Microsoft Outlook. And I checked my numbers. This is as of a week ago. It keeps a running count, and I had about 13,000 emails since I installed it, and out of that, 9,000 were spam. 9,000 out of 13,000 were spam mail, which automatically got filtered out for that approach. That's what got filtered. Of course, a few extra slipped through, so probably closer to 10,000 since I installed this earlier in the year.
That's just ridiculous.
It's not even... I mean, it's a joke. It's just so sickening. And this is my work account. This is my work email account. This is not Hotmail. Everybody makes the comments and jokes about Hotmail and Yahoo. Yeah, they get a lot, but this is my work account, and I get that much there. How am I supposed to...
Your work?
Yeah, exactly. Well, luckily, this thing helps me out tremendously. It filters out most of them. And I can concentrate. I can just, delete a couple of the others out. And we're actually going to have an upcoming episode with detail. I actually have an article right in front of me called Stopping Spam. And it's an IT pro talks about the tricks spammers use to evade anti-spam filters and countermeasures. So I'm going to talk about that on an upcoming episode, some detailed technical aspects of how this works. We've touched on some in the past on the show. But I'm going to go into that in another episode, so we won't spend too much time here. The other thing about this story, though, that actually kind of pissed me off is, again, like I said, I agree with it. I'm all for vigilante justice, not only on the internet, but in, anyway, we won't go there. But the thing that really pissed me off, and the article didn't say this, this is just in my mind. I find it incredibly convenient that when it's the hackers taking on the spammers, or the hackers that are taking down child pornography sites, stuff like that, we get articles written in magazines about us. We get articles about how people are coming, vigilante justice articles, not good hacker artists, they call us vigilante justice But they write articles, and everybody kind of turns a blind eye because it's a common enemy. We're all, you know, out there.
Right.
But when, you know, somebody like Adrian Lamo or anybody publicly comes out and says, hey, New York Times website has a vulnerability, or, you know, Amazon.com has this vulnerability on their site they need to patch, all of a sudden, here comes the fucking FBI wanting to swarm and put this kid in jail for something that all he did was tell. You know, how convenient is it that there's a double standard there? You know, that those kind of stories make me mad. I get on a soapbox every time I hear one of these, so I'm going to back off of it once again because I have a tendency to really get pissed about stuff like that. But that's a double standard. I mean, if you want, everybody complains about hackers are bad guys and they all do this and do that. Well, look, here's an example of some of the stuff that people support and that we do good, you know, and again, good and bad, right and wrong is very, very...
thin line.
Yeah, and, you know, and everybody has their own opinion on what's good and bad, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, here's a lot of good stuff that hackers do, and I've said before, if it wasn't for good hackers, or real hackers, as I call them, I mean, Linux itself is built by hackers. It's a bunch of open source people working together, developing an alternative operating system. How great is that? Anyway, I digress. I'm going to move on. Another topic. You know, I'm going to skip this. I'm going to go into this. I have a little timeline here that I think is kind of neat. I thought I'd share with the listeners. This is, I already ruined a couple of these because I told you before we started taping. But I have this little timeline, and this is from this month's Popular Science magazine, one of the many that I've subscribed to. It's a timeline about the RIAA MP3 CD, just general music topics. And I thought I'd read a couple of these dates, and you know, I'll bounce a couple off of you. You already know the answer to this one, but in 1982, Sony Music released the first commercial CD. And if you remember correctly, it is, of course...
Mr. Billy Joel.
Billy Joel's 52nd Street, 1982. That was the first one. Just a little interesting tidbit. But here's something I didn't tell you yet. This one, let's see if you can guess this one. In 1989, okay, this is a technical... 1989, the first consumer CD recorder. Denon, D-E-N-O-N. Is that Denon or Denon?
Denon, yeah.
DN-770R was released. The unit costs how much? Here, I'll give you a little hint.
Okay.
Blank CDs, blank discs in 1989, $40.
I'm going to say maybe $6,000-$7,000.
Triple it.
Wow.
$20,000 for the first CD burner, 1989. That's not that long. I mean, I guess it is long ago, but it doesn't seem long ago, does it?
Well, something that I'm not sure if you might know is that computer generations, the way technology goes, each generation today is, I believe, 18 months.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at it that way, that's, I don't know how many generations old. And I guess you can maybe double or triple the price as it goes back compared to today.
Well, and look, even right now, I think that's even shrinking. I think it's a faster than 18 months nowadays because it was only at the beginning of this year, January of this year, when DVD burners started to really come out. I mean, of course, they started high, too.
Right.
But not like $20,000 high. And I mean, here it is. It's not even... By Christmas time, I bet you by Christmas, you will be able to get... It'll be maybe after rebates or maybe on one weekend only sale, but I bet you can get DVD burners for $150.
I'd probably say even less, maybe $100.
You think I was going to say $99, but I wasn't sure if they're going to go that low.
You might find your no-name brands down there.
Yeah, I mean, you can find those for $199 now. Now, as of September 23rd? September 23rd, you can find them for $199. Again, it may be after rebates or something, but still. So, yeah, that just blew my mind. $20,000? That's more than my car. The Stankmobile did not cost $20,000. That's sad.
Yeah, it's a small fortune there.
And then $40 for the blank disc. I mean, you know, back then it wasn't cost-effective to do anything with it, so...
I think I remember the most paying for a CD back in the day, it was like $10.
Oh, yeah, but...
$40, yeah, that's... Wow.
You're lucky if you can get a CD single now for... You get two singles for $10. All right, here's you might be able to get this one. 1998, college students Justin Frankel and Dmitry Boldyrev, I hope I'm not mispronouncing that, created this first mainstream MP3 player.
At the Rio?
No, this is software player.
Oh.
Winamp. Winamp, 1998.
I was going to say Winamp, but I could have sworn there was something out before that that went mainstream.
This says first mainstream MP3 player software and offer it for free on the net. Maybe it wasn't a free.
That's possible.
Yeah. Okay, here's an easy one. Here's a very easy one. Northeastern University student Sean Fanning, 1999. What piece of software? Pretty much the one that started it all. This is the one that everybody has in the news, and still to this day is the
Napster.
That would have to be Napster.
The Napster. Well, I'm saying the Napster is. I don't know if you've seen the Italian Job, but it kind of pokes fun at Napster.
No, I haven't seen that.
Very, very humorous.
Let's see. 2001, Napster dies. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see, what's another interesting? 2003, which is current, they mentioned the Apple iTunes Music Store, 99 cents a song. 5 million downloads at 99 cents a song in its first 8 weeks of operation. 5 million.
That's a lot of cash.
And I said on the show before, that's the closest thing to a happy compromise, a happy medium, that has come out of all of this whole situation.
That's not bad, but if you think about it, 99 cents a song, and most CDs today have, what, maybe 12, 15 tracks?
Probably 12. I mean, that's the other thing that they jab you on, is they don't even fill the CDs up.
Right. Maybe if they dropped it down to 50 cents, it might be pretty good.
And that's what I think, too. I think 50 cents would be a fair price, and I would actually buy a lot of music that way. You know, and then you can pick and choose the singles you want. You're not stuck with one good song and 11 songs that suck, you know?
How many times has that happened?
A lot. A lot. Here is something about the Rio. Let's see. 1999 also, Recording Industry Association of America, our good friends, sues Diamond Multimedia to stop sales of the Rio. $200 32-meg MP3 player. August 1999, the suit was dropped, and opening the floodgates for portable MP3 player manufacturers. So you had the right year for the Rio, absolutely.
Okay.
Here you go. This is also a current. 2003, worldwide CDR disc sales. Blank CDRs worldwide, estimated at how much?
By today's prices?
Yeah, you know what, and there's not... I won't even make a guess on this because it's just too vague of a question. This blows my mind. Worldwide CDRs. Now, first of all, if there's this much of a market for CDRs, that tells you what people think about the high prices and the RIAA in general, the fact that this is how much demand there is. Again, I won't go into a whole rant, but worldwide CDR disc sales are estimated at 5.7... billion, with a B, $1 billion. Billion. You know, a spindle of 100, you know, breaks down to what, 5 cents each? That's a lot of blank CDs, man. A lot.
A lot of happy burners out there.
Yeah. I'm sure they're making perfectly legal backup copies of their own desktops and software, though. I'm sure that's what they're using them for.
Of course, that's what I do.
Well, that's what we all do. We just want our right to make backups, that's all. Anyway, that's enough of those. I thought those were the $20,000 thing was my favorite. I can't believe how much that cost in the beginning. And $5.7 billion, those were just some mind-numbing numbers.
Well, then... Not to go back on that, but Denon actually makes very high quality audio equipment. Even some of the stuff today is very expensive.
Dude, for $20,000, I better get personal one-on-one concerts in my living room from the artists in question. $20,000? Put it back into perspective. A car. What kind of quality could they possibly make?
Well, let's say your average home theater system. You know, receiver, you might spend maybe $300-$400 on that. But I think I saw one the other day, a very high-end Denon was about maybe $2,000-$3,000, you know, just for the receiver itself.
Wow. And is it worth it?
Had a lot of features.
Well, I know you're very big. You're an audiophile. I know you get into that a lot. Do you think it's worth? I mean, you're telling me that you think yes, it is high. Is it high quality? Is it better quality?
It's very high quality. It's got all the latest features, you know, DTS and Dolby EX and all that other good stuff. Like 50 different inputs. You know, the thing weighs like 200 pounds. I'm sure if I had the money, it'd probably be worth it. But if you don't, you'd probably get away with something that's $200 or $300 and sounds just as good.
Yeah.
The average consumer, they won't tell the difference.
Exactly. But, you know, I've heard many people say that they can tell the difference between them. So, you know, I don't know. For me, I'm very happy. I have a kind of a medium range system, and I'm perfectly happy with it. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure you don't need to control the audio in every single room you have.
No, but, you know, I guess in a perfect world, if I win the lottery, then maybe I'll go looking at Denon products.
Right.
All right. Well, you know, there's one other topic I want to cover today. I'm going to skip this. I'm going to go straight to the IDS stuff because you and I talked about that in the past, and you have some experience with it. So IDS, of course, is intrusion detection systems as opposed to IPS, which is?
That's your...
intrusion prevention systems.
I've got too much work on the brain here. Oh, it's all Oracle today.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is another first for radio, actually. We probably should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but while we're recording the entire show, you are doing, why don't you let them in on a very general...
The powers that be here have DBAs, or database administrators. Unfortunate for me, or fortunate for me, I've been tasked with now being a DBA, among other things. So not only do I have to learn Oracle now and how to set it up and how to maintain it, but also have to figure out how to do hot backups, which our DBAs couldn't do. Well, they tried to do in 6 months and still couldn't do it. How sad is that?
It's incredibly, incredibly sad, and the listeners don't know how much I can relate to it, and we can't really give them too much on that. But we will move on. So you're installing, you're actually doing what?
I'm in the middle of an upgrade, and once the upgrade is done, still working on how to figure out hot backups. I'm sure some of our listeners might already know how to do this, but for me, not really a DBA. You know, it's kind of new, but I'm making progress.
Right. And at the same time, recording Binary Revolution Radio. Congratulations. A radio first. We've had episodes where we've installed distros of Linux while we record, or installed or upgraded software. I think this is the first Oracle episode we've ever done. So you are going down in history as the first. But we're going to talk about a little bit, again, intrusion detection system versus intrusion prevention systems. And I'm going to, for sake of me not stumbling over the words any worse than I already am, we're going to say IDS versus IPS, and I think the listeners know what we mean now. But IDS has a very bad reputation for a couple of reasons. It gets a lot of false positives, which if you remember back on our episode on spam, false positives are when they say that something is wrong, or they call something spam, or they call something a problem that really isn't. It's misinterpreted. And that's the bigger issue, is when you accidentally delete a real email, if you accidentally turn away a customer, or send, basically the way IDS works is it just kind of sniffs, it sits in between the visitor and the server and notifies somebody if there's an unusual request or something unusual happens. Usually a security officer on the other end of a pager, or just sends an email or whatever saying, you know, this happened, and let the people investigate it after the fact. So I always use the analogy for this, and I don't know if you're going to agree with my analogy, but I always say it reminds me of a car alarm. When you buy a car, when you have a car with an alarm in it, and someone tries to break into your car, the alarm goes off. Very plain simple. The problem is that if someone parks next to you and gets out of their car and brushes your car, they also set the alarm off. And if somebody just happens to walk in the front of your car, they might set your alarm off. Or if a dog runs underneath or a cat jumps on your car, it sets your alarm off. If the wind blows too hard, it might set your alarm off. And we've all seen and heard those cars in the parking lot. The alarms just go off and go off. And does anybody go look and check? No, we ignore it. It's what happens when you have too many false positives.
Right.
It's what happens when you constantly, you know, every unusual thing, the way the majority of them are set up is they send an email out, which that's even ridiculous. What are you going to check it the next morning after you've been hacked and see what kind of, you know, that's just a dumb idea. Ideally, you have someone at the other end of a pager who can get on and check. But because of the number of false positives, like the scenario with the car alarm, people are going to get so many pages, they're going to be like, forget this, I'm trying to sleep, you know, and it ends up being not effective, in my personal opinion. Do you agree or disagree with that? Is that a good or bad analogy?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And even today, you know, where I work, I get a lot of those, I won't mention any names, but there are some people that come up to me and they show me reports saying, you know, you've got holes open here and there, and, you know, it's just simply not true because the software is outdated or needs to get better software.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up. There's also a maintenance point. You have to update that software anytime things change. It has to be updated pretty much anytime another piece of software that it's watching or listening to gets updated.
Right, or maybe they need to watch, you know, cert advisories, you know, so as when they announce that, they can update their software accordingly.
Right, now, along the same logic there, that's going to be the same problem with intrusion prevention systems, or IPS. You're going to have the same problem there with updating software, and the difference between the two is that intrusion prevention, as the name indicates, stops. It prevents people from coming in, malicious attacks, viruses, spam. I mean, to go again, it's not an email thing, but it prevents malicious packets from coming in. False positives are still going to be a problem in that scenario as well, and you have to keep the software updated, and you have to keep your IPS patched and looking for the proper things. Kind of like a virus checker, you have to update the IPS regularly so it knows what to look for, so it can catch any new forms of attack, and the cert advisories, like you said, and snag, and all these different mailing lists to find out, you know, what it should be watching for. You have to keep that updated as well, so it's a lot of maintenance. But the difference is that it is supposed to stop people from coming in. It's prevention. Stop packets from coming in to attack. The danger here is that the false positive is potentially is a lost customer. If Amazon were to put an IPS on their system, and somebody comes in and, you know, HTML sometimes loads wrong, or it just brings up a bad packet with one letter off, one letter different. And when somebody clicks on something to try to order it, it's not necessarily malicious or an attack of any kind, but an IPS, if it's not properly configured, maintained, watched, set up, it's going to cause you to lose a customer. It's going to tell this person, I'm sorry, but you can't do that, and they're going to be, you know, go somewhere else. They're going to, you know, you're turning people away, and you're, it's not exactly a solution either, in my mind. I guess it's, would you say it's better or worse than IDS, though?
There's a time and a place for everything. You just have to watch your scenario to figure out what you need. Like, for example, with Amazon, I don't know if they'd want to actually have something that tight watching HTTP, but maybe they want to watch other ports, you know, like Telnet or FTP. It all depends also how much money you have and you're willing to dedicate to it. I know, for example, here, a firewall would probably be a good example of an IPS, but it all depends how well you tune the firewall.
Right. Well, the difference with a firewall versus an IPS is that they work on two different layers. The IPS is actually going to look on software.
Software layer, whereas right. the firewall is more of a hardware layer.
Exactly. So, thus the problem of the software issue of whether it's going to be smart enough to detect mal packets or bad packets versus normal packets.
Right, and a lot of it's learning too, so you have to spend time tuning the software, and that can take weeks, if not months, at a time.
Again, and as it updates and the world changes, you have to also reteach and re-update it, so it's a constant maintenance.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think it'd be well worth it if you had the time and maybe the staff to do it.
But the thing is, it's even more fundamental than that. See, this seems like I guess it's good. Every attempt at these, they're potentially good, but the bottom line is, and let's go back to your example of Telnet. Okay, you want to lock down Telnet. There's no need for people to be coming in during a Telnet, so you put the IPS to watch for that. Well, guess what? There's a much easier, simpler, and better solution. Turn off Telnet.
Right. You still turn off Telnet, but I'd still like to know if people are trying Telnet. I mean, sometimes I'm anal like that, but...
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I do too. You're absolutely right. I do like to see what people are trying. They may not get there, but that's a good... And that's another point I had put on the notes here that I didn't know if we were going to go into, but this is where I see a fantastic use for a honeypot. You intercept these people. You can either turn off the telnet, or you can have a redirector or a simulation or something on there to pretend to be telnet. There's plenty of those out there.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of, you know, people think they're all over these, back orifice. They think they found a system with a back orifice Trojan on it and they're controlling something. No, there are back orifice fake Trojans that are nothing but entrapment software that will watch you, see what you're doing and where you're coming from, and they know everything about you, and you think you're doing one thing, and you're actually right in the middle of this big honeypot, and they're watching everything you do. This is a great example of that. If someone tries to telnet into this example we just made up, you can have it redirected to a honeypot. They think that they are telneted into Amazon.com, when in actuality, they're not. They've been sent to a honeypot. This is exactly where I think IPS could work hand-in-hand. Or even IDS, but not so much. And the IPS could work hand-in-hand to route things to a honeypot. So not only are you preventing them from getting into your system, which is ideally the point of it, but you're also able to watch and see what's going on. Now, you get into kind of a privacy issue there, but... And I might get hate mail for this, saying this on the air, but... If you're trying to break into a server, I'm sorry, you kind of brought that on yourself. That's the way I look at it. I don't believe in that type of hacking and that type of action, so, you know, I don't really have a lot of sympathy for that kind of...
Right, you'll probably start up a small crusade with that.
Yeah, I know. I'll probably get some mail, but, hey, we'll read it on the air next week. And actually, I think that is a good ending point. Unless you had any... Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up? I don't want to cut you short on the IDS if you had time to say any other... Because, again, I know you've worked with it quite a bit. Well, a little bit, right?
A little bit, and all I say is that you don't have to go full-blown honeypot. There are other pieces of software out there that will sort of sit there and look at you and just kind of see what you're doing. But at the same time, it's not quite as robust.
Right. Right. All right, well, you know what? We covered a lot of good material today. A lot of good stuff. You are very good on the show.
I appreciate it.
Very good, very good. And since we're at the close of the show and it's time for me to get out shouts, I'm going to shout out to you coming in, helping me out at the last minute. We are recording this just before we stream the show, so as soon as we're done, I got to mix this, start streaming it up tonight. So thank you very much for the last minute bailout. I appreciate that. Did you have anybody you wanted to shout out to? You got open air here. Anybody you wanted to say hi? Anybody you wanted to shout out?
Not yet. I'll see what happens next week.
Not yet. All right. And for those people who are going to email me and tell me that I'm wrong, we have people who pride themselves on being black hat hackers. They want that. So, you know, if anybody wants to email, by all means, I am not right all the time, wrong all the time. Most of this stuff is my opinion. If you disagree with it, if you agree with it, if you want to tell me to go stick my head up my ass, letters@benrev.com. As we always say, you can email me about anything. And tonight's music is from Rocket Productions. It's called All Systems Go. And that's it. So we close the show every week the same way. We will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Peace out.